I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to Forma, the audio companion to formajournal.com and a podcast that contemplates the intersection of classical thought and contemporary culture. I'm David Kern. Today's guest is Dorian Stuber. He is an associate professor of English at Hendricks College in Conway, Arkansas, where he teaches Holocaust literature and 20th century British literature. He's the editor of Critical Insights, Holocaust Literature, which is from Salem Press in 2016, and is a book designed to introduce students, their teachers, and others interested readers to the topic. He has published reviews and review essays in several online publications, including Open Letters Monthly, Numerus Inc., and Quarterly Conversation. He blogs about books at Eiger, Mensch, Jungfrau at WordPress.com. He grew up in Canada, which is where he first fell in love with mysteries. And mysteries, or crime fiction, is the topic for today's episode. Dorian and I have chatted with a number of other people online about our mutual love of crime fiction, and he quickly proved to be someone who both knew a lot about crime fiction and had read a lot of crime fiction. So I figured while we are celebrating mystery fiction on Forma this week, I would ask him to come on the podcast and chat with me for a few minutes. So we had a brief conversation over the phone about our mutual love of crime fiction, where that came from, as well as some people that are worth checking out that you may not yet have heard of. Before I get you over to that interview, though, I just want to remind you that we have lots of good content over at Forma. In addition to the Russell Kirk celebration that we had last week and the week before that, we have lots of great content this week. Heidi White wrote about Agatha Christie's views of justice through the character of Hercule Poirot, and John Wilson, the former editor of Books and Culture, wrote about his favorite crime fiction of the last 100 years. If you like this kind of content, we would appreciate if you would subscribe, certainly. You can subscribe to our quarterly journal for $39 for the year or $4 a month. So you can go over to formajournal.com, check out that content, and if you are so inclined, click that subscribe button to do so. This is the time of gift giving. We're getting into the Christmas and holiday season. So we do have gift subscriptions if you are interested in that. If you have a friend or a family member or a colleague or a person who loves great literature and who would love to contemplate that intersection between classical thought and contemporary culture, we would love to be part of making that person's holiday that much better. All right, with that, let me get you over to my conversation with Dorian Stuber about crime fiction. Enjoy. So, where did your love of crime fiction stem from? Where did that derive from?
I think maybe it comes from growing up in Canada, which is so closely associated with the UK, and at least especially it was in the 70s and 80s, right? I think this is not quite true anymore, and to the same degree that it was. But right. And so, you know, like all the librarians that I remember from my childhood were like Scottish and stuff. And so, you know, that kind of that tradition, the Agatha Christie golden era kind of Dorothy Sayers stuff was just around a lot. Like, and I remember discovering Agatha Christie in my junior high school library where there were like, you know, all of her books, I think. So, and I'm not sure that would be true for middle school today necessarily, but these texts were just kind of around, you know, and I remember like bookstores always having really large mysteries sections. And again, I think maybe they're called, you know, we call crime fiction now or something, but mysteries was really the term that I remember. And so it wasn't really like a family love or something like that, because although my dad is a big reader, he's never been really a big reader of that kind of fiction. So it's something that I came to myself, I guess, which is also maybe part of the appeal, right? But through these kinds of like inspirations that were, you know, my parents were they immigrated to Canada from Switzerland, so I was the first generation born in Canada, and I was kind of always looking for ways to kind of like be a part of that place. I was, you know, that classic dilemma of the oldest child of the immigrant family is your kind of guide for the family in a way. And so you're in this position of like trying to have to make your way in this new place, but it is your place, but it's not your family's place in the same way. And so I think then like these people like these librarians and stuff were important to me in kind of like finding ways where I could figure out an identity for myself. And so I think latching onto that was all part of that. And of course, the fact that like, especially when you're like, I don't know, 13 or something, like an Agatha Christie is like a great kind of adult book, right?
That's
like
true.
It's totally
yeah.
It's manageable, you know, it's suspenseful, it's exciting. But it's not a kid's book. And again, this was a time when YA was not really the kind of, totally not the thing that it is now. So that might've been part of the appeal as well, I think.
Yeah. Carving out that independence. Where did you grow up in Canada?
Calgary, Alberta, okay. Western Canada. Yeah.
I was born just outside of Toronto.
Oh, so, right. Okay.
So my
mom, I lived in Toronto for a while.
My mom's in Ontario.
Ontarioan person from Ontario. I don't even know what we say. Yeah.
So you read Christie, pretty when you were in your middle school. You said when did you discover?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you this: what was your then and now? What was your favorite Christie novel, and has that changed?
Oh wow! I haven't reread Christie at all since. And it's actually really weird. Like I've thought about this recently in the last couple of years. Like, I feel like there's more kind of critical attention to her, you know, and for a long time, then I went away from crime fiction, you know, and I was sort of then associated that with like, with my childhood, and I was going to be serious about literature. And I, like, cause I, you know, I went to graduate school and I was like, that's not who I'm going to be. But then it was when I was in graduate school that I was like, I rediscovered it. And partly like through happenstance, my girlfriend at the time's mother gave me a Reginald Hill novel as a gift.
Okay.
Which I was like, okay, sure. I'll give this a try. And I was like, this is amazing. And I totally remembered like, oh yeah, I love these books. And so I started, and graduate school is a time of great like anxiety, right? Cause you have a huge project to do with like a very distant deadline, and that's not a good recipe, at least for me, for being very productive. So, but you're feeling really stressed all the time, and you know, inadequate, and like a fraud. And the whole system is designed to make you feel inadequate. And so, the crime fiction was a wonderful way for me to be like, I'm escaping that in some sense. Yeah. And so, I was able to kind of get past that my college self had that sort of lowbrow idea, you know.
Yeah.
Any rate, I think that. For a long time, I guess I still associated Christie as being maybe not as sophisticated, but that surely is not true. And I think that what I need to do is revisit them and get a real sense of that. So I don't even know if I could tell you what my favorite Christie was as a kid. It was because they sort of were all like, I mean, maybe something like Murder of Roger Ackroyd. It's so classic, but like left an impression. But they kind of, it was more the sort of like the atmosphere of Agatha Christiness, if that makes sense. Yeah. That's really stuck with me as opposed to any individual title. And indeed, I really think that way about crime fiction in general. Like, I'm pretty lousy at remembering plots. Like, I was thinking about this in my drive-in this morning. I was like, okay, what crime fiction do I like anyways? I was like, well, Tana French. I love Tana French. I just devoured her new book like 2 weeks ago. And then I was like, what? Who actually happened at the end of that book? Like, I was having a real struggle remembering. Like, and yet, the qualities of Tana French's writing are so vivid for me. And it's kind of a certain sort of atmosphere that particular crime writers have that I guess that I really hold on to above and beyond the end. Even though the plots are what kind of drive my, you know, I devour that aspect of it that keeps the pages turning, but it's not what sticks with me.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Do you think that that's what kind of sets apart that sense of atmosphere, like well-defined, well-drawn, an atmosphere that we can sort of sensory experience through our senses, that that's what sets apart sort of just low quality genre fiction. And then, as you know, something a little bit closer to highbrow genre fiction, if I can use that term.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's always kind of like, it's always pretty sketchy to me to even, I mean, genre fiction is a useful term to use in the sense that like, I think there are different genres and they have their own ways of being, as it were. They have their own kind of rules and stuff, and and the play with that is really instructive. And so, but I think the only thing I bridle at a little is this idea that like, say, literary fiction is not genre fiction. Like, it's genre fiction too. It just didn't get tagged with that particular,
you know, put in a different title, as it were. Bookstore.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. I kind of think that like, crime fiction is like where the best realist writing is happening now, actually, in a way. And so like atmosphere, location in particular, I mean, one thing I think many people who like crime fiction like are like the sort of like, you can travel somewhere else. Like, so, you know, now I know something about Iceland or, you know, because I've read Indridason, right? Or Sigurdsdóttir or something like that. And there's that aspect of it that I think is appealing. I guess I was thinking about this. For me, I think I'm really interested in the way crime fiction gives us, through the figure of the detective or the police person, like kind of sort of tension between like the sort of freedom they have from everyday responsibility, right? Like their job is not very well defined, right? And the parameters of their job is not well defined.
Yeah.
Which incidentally, I think is one reason a lot of academics like crime fiction, because academic life is like this too. Like you kind of never, it's never clear when you can stop working, because you're always have, you know, like you're
always
a project you're working on or and so there's never, and you're always working on, or typically you're working on things that you actually also enjoy. So you're kind of like your private life, your personal life and your work life are kind of getting blurred. And the detective is often doing something like that too, right? Like they're getting all consumed by this task. And it's bleeding over into their personal lives. And famously detectives have really lousy personal lives, right? So on the one hand, they have a lot of freedom and it's like, so it's kind of like there's not the constraint, but on the other hand, I mean, they're really defined by work. And so it's a place where we really see work happening in literature, which I think is like interesting to us. And work that they love, right? Yeah. Which is something that a lot of people like don't get to do today. Like capitalism is like, you know, isn't interested in people doing work that they love necessarily. And so I think that we can kind of envy these figures in a certain sense as well. Sorry, you were going to say something else. Well,
I was just going to say, I want to go back to, you were talking about how you, I think this is related to what you're talking about. You were, rediscovered your love of crime fiction when you were in graduate school. And so you felt like you were going to start thinking seriously about literature, was what you said. Did you find that then became a pursuit when you were thinking about crime fiction? Were you in search of serious, like in search of crime fiction that you could consider serious literature, or was it sort of a freeing thing for you where you didn't have to think about
it? Right. Good. Yeah. Interesting. I think it's the latter more, sort of kind of freeing in a way. Although I guess one thing that like graduate school either teaches you or indoctrinates you to, depending on how you want to look at it, is like to look at everything with a kind of critical eye, as it were. And so, I mean, so I don't know, like the idea of escapism itself is kind of like, I don't know if it's been ruined or if that's the way to put it or what, but like, I've deliberately chosen not to teach about crime fiction, which I could do if I wanted to. And I have colleagues who I respect, like Rowan Mateson at Dalhousie, and who teaches a wonderful crime fiction class. And on her blog, she writes a lot about her teaching of it. And anyone who's interested should check it out. Her blog's called Novel Readings. But I decided I didn't want to do that. It was partly I wanted to kind of keep that for me, right? But I guess I do still sort of like think about it a little bit more in a way, like as I was just suggesting with my little pet theory here about the work stuff. I guess the crime fiction I like best is the ones that like maybe I feel like they are offering me a little bit more to think with, but I also like that I don't have to have an idea about them. I can also just kind of, I can just enjoy them too.
It seems like, I mean, we could get into some pretty interesting conversation about the nature of literary scholarship, that it would, that when we read literature, somehow it's forcing us to feel like we always have to have an idea about something, as opposed to like literary scholarship being something more about, you know, wallowing.
Right. Well, and I would want to split the difference in the sense that like maybe we don't have to have an idea of something, but we get to have an idea about something. Like it could perhaps be kind of a joyful thing. Like, wow, exciting, you know?
Yeah. Because you love the thing that it leads to, the thought leads to what you want to be expressing, the things you're thinking. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Let's talk about some specific authors. You just mentioned, who was it you just mentioned? Tana French?
Tana French. Yeah.
So you said that there's an atmosphere there as well. Are most of the authors that you love, the crime fiction authors that you love, is it that atmosphere that they're creating? Because you said you don't remember the plots. Like, I was thinking about mm-hmm. that. I recently, not even that long ago, I read The Moving Target, the Ross McDonald novel, the first of the Lou Archer ones.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm new to Ross McDonald and I love that book. And I don't really remember a lot about what happened, but I remember right. a lot of the atmosphere and I remember the character.
Yeah.
That the way you feel about almost the majority of these books that you love.
Yeah, most of them. Occasionally there's some I remember specific plot twists. Speaking of McDonald, there's the Galton case. I remember the thing that it turns on partly because it has to do with Canada. So it's kind of funny to me, but, but in general, like, yeah, no, I don't remember the specifics and as much about like the who did it or whatever, but, and I'm actually fairly terrible at guessing, you know, like who it's going to be. Yeah, this, that kind of that, what you're calling atmosphere is much stronger to me. Like in Tana French, for example, I think, her books are really interesting about like, the possibility of like friendship, you know, like there's almost no like romantic relationships in her books at all. Instead we have, especially these detectives kind of having to work together and how fraught that often is, but how wonderful that can be to work with someone and like work as a team or kind of like bounce ideas off each other. And so I think that's pretty interesting. And so,
and that all without a romantic tension.
Right. It's weird, right? Like it's quite unusual. Or the books of Josephine Tay, I think who's like a golden age kind of English crime writer. I think she's really wonderful, but they're also kind of like, I don't know, the intricacies of the plot are kind of secondary there as well. So sometimes it's kind of like those sort of something thematic, like the friendship thing or the kind of atmosphere of a certain kind of place. I really like the Brother Cadfill mysteries, by Ellis Peters from the 70s and 80s, I think in the 12th century in Shrewsbury. The monk is the detective figure. And this, her depiction of that, the closed world of the cloister and how it's always getting impinged upon by, you know, like ordinary secular life, typically in the form of some kind of crime, is really interesting to me. So those things stick with me. Like, although I could totally not tell you like who did it in the first seven or eight of those Ellis Peters books that I've read, you know, like,
yeah. Is there anybody that you've read recently that's surprised you? And that doesn't necessarily have to mean that it's somebody that's a new writer, but just somebody who you read for the first time that maybe you hadn't heard about or, just didn't expect mm-hmm. to be as high quality as he or she was.
Right. Right. This was certainly not like, won't be news to lots of people, but new to me was Dorothy B. Hughes. The New York Review of Books Classics has reissued a couple of her books in the last few years. They're from the 50s and 60s. And then I read tracked down another one that was from the 40s. And it's not that I didn't expect her to be good, but I just like, I didn't really know much about her, and they really blew me away, especially her last book, The Expendable Man, or Unexpendable Man, maybe, I can't remember, which unfortunately it's got this kind of amazing sort of revelation that happens about 30 or 40 pages in that, like, I guess I really can't talk about it or ruins things, but it just changes how you are understanding everything that you've been reading. So she's very good with narrators, and not even unreliable narrators, but just kind of narrative point of view and using it in surprising ways. And so I was really like, wow, she's fantastic. In a Lonely Place is another one. One of those ones, New York Review of Books released, which was a film with, now I'm forgetting his name. Okay. A famous actor in the 50s. So which some people might know from the film, but I gather, I don't know, I haven't seen it, that the novel is actually quite different. Anyway, she is really terrific and been a, like this year, a big discovery for me.
Let's talk about a couple of the classics. P.D. Mm-hmm. James. Where do you stand with P.D. James?
Not a huge fan, actually. I find him very fussy.
I like that you're kind of breaking the mold here, because so many people love like those Daglish books.
Yeah, I think he's really boring. I can't finish them. I do find them in general, I find the bloat in crime fiction from sort of like maybe the 90s on like ridiculous. Like they're all like 500 pages now. And like, if you read one from the 70s, like 200 pages, like,
yeah.
Which I'm like, that's how long it really probably ought to be. But I do find them. Okay. I'm just gonna be crazily petty, but it sticks with me all the time with T.D. James. Like, she just overuses the word fawn. Everyone is wearing fawn colored clothing. Like, I'm just like, it's beige for crying out loud.
I'm never gonna read P.D. James the same now that you said that.
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know. Lots of people I respect are like, she's awesome. And I did like An Unsuitable Job for a Woman, which is one of the two Cordelia Gray mysteries she wrote about this female detective, which was a pretty early, from the, I think, early 70s, I believe. And so fairly early kind of in terms of thinking about a female detective. And I thought that was actually pretty interesting. But yeah, not my favorite.
What's the, who would you say is the who are the greatest contemporary crime writers from the UK or just even, you know, further, even more internationally?
Sure. Well, I've been talking about Tana French a lot, but I got to say her name again. I mean, she's Irish, so not quite UK, but she's, I think she's just really kind of a genius. A friend of mine was saying the other day that like, she's getting so famous, she doesn't need to be edited anymore, which I think is possibly maybe true. And that's not so great, but in general, Her books are long, but they earn their longness, which I don't always find with contemporary crime fiction. And so, and it just her, she's got a really intriguing prose style. It's always different. She always has a different first person narrator. Anyone who likes Ishiguro, for example, and his kind of work with narrators, like, I think will love Tana French. So I think she's fantastic. I really love both Arnaldur Indridason from Iceland and Henning Mankell from Sweden. I think those are, especially the kind of middle, Mankell had this series with Volander, the detective. They were made into some TV shows. Kenneth Branagh played him in a British remake of them. The middle set of those, the Volander series, are some of the most, just for pure suspense, are like hard to top. Like, just like, I will stay up all night reading it kind of stuff, which is, you know, I think that's a nice feeling to have once in a while. And so, so I think these are great. And the other thing about the Mankells I really like are you often get a good sense of the police unit as a team. Like, it's not just the rogue, you know, detective or the PI or whatever. There's actually kind of the sense of the unit, you know? Yes, exactly. Right. So that's, and I think that's interesting. And the Indridasons are interesting to me because especially, earlier on, the books were so different from each other. It wasn't always even clear, like, in what way are they crime novels? Like, so, I mean, they're not just like always, someone dies, we're going to find out who did it. And plus I have a fascination with Iceland. And so they're very evocative of that landscape and stuff. So I think those are some names. I'm sure after this, as soon as we end this call, I'm going to be like, oh, but I forgot to name all the other people who I really care about. But
yeah. Where would you tell people, if people have sort of had an aversion, or for some reason they've, maybe they just never got into it, or they just were always told that, you know, it's just cheap lit or something like that. Where would you say start? When you're young, obviously, you know, Agatha Christie for a lot of people is sort of the gateway drug for people who love
it. Right.
But maybe for people who are as adults and they're like, okay, I'm interested. Like, where would you say they should start? Just start anywhere? Or is there someone that's perfect for starting?
Good question. I think start anywhere. Honestly, I would say start with try to change your mindset in the sense of like, I don't know, try to bracket your preconceptions for a bit and just dive into it and see what you think. I remember a book that when I was in graduate school that I read that really struck me and I guess kind of set this flame burning, as it were, was one of Val McDermott's first books. She's a Scottish writer. I think it's called A Place of Execution. It's very suspenseful and it's really intriguing about using two different timelines, which a lot of crime fiction does, you know, something in the past that's reverberating into the present. But that is, I think, a really terrific book. If you are maybe like coming at this from a different kind of angle, if you're interested maybe in like romance or in Gothic fiction, then I would say Daphne du Maurier is a really like fantastic writer and a kind of interesting, because it's not really crime fiction, right? But if you read like My Cousin Rachel or something, or Rebecca, like they're kind of, you know, analogous or parallels in a way. And so like that could be an entry, I guess, you know, or for a person who's sort of more no-nonsense or something, or fancy themselves that way, that maybe something like Hammett would be the way to go. I don't know.
Maybe Chandler or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you want the hard-boiled sort of type of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you, have your views on, I mean, we talked about this a little bit, but have your views on what makes a crime novel or mystery novel, whichever word we could talk, we didn't really spend any time defining that, we could. But have your views on what makes a book like that last or kind of become part of the, I don't know, subgenre canon or something? Like, have your views on what makes something like that linger or last changed? That was kind of a long-winded way of asking a very simple question. But,
No, it's a good one. No, I think that partly my response is that like I would answer the same way I would in terms of any other kind of genre, including so-called literary fiction, like in the sense that there's a lot of like contingent historical reasons why some things like become famous or canonical and others don't. And so, and it's not necessarily about like just pure quality, you know, some kind of imagined idea of pure quality or something like this. And so like, I'm thinking about those Library of America volumes that Sarah Weinman edited and put out in the last couple of years, of these like it's called something like Forgotten Female Crime Writers from the 40s and 50s or something. And there's like some amazing stuff in there. Dorothy B. Hughes, who I mentioned earlier, she has a novel in that. And so like, there's lots of things that can be rediscovered, and that it's not because they're not good enough to be canonical. So my sense of that idea of how the canon works, is true irrespective of what kind of genre I'm thinking about. I don't know, but I feel like you're also asking me a question about like, what lasts for me? Like, are you also asking about like my personal canon kind of?
Maybe 10 years ago you thought, you know, this is the kind of, this is why you're going to read a book and you're like, this book is definitely gonna be a book I'm going to come back to in 10 years, or everyone's going to be talking about it. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be the big sleep or something like that of our generation.
But then
maybe you never thought about it again. So is it just kind of chance, or you can't account for those sorts of things? Or is there something that you've discovered to be true or consistent among these books that do tend to last?
What a good question. I don't know. I don't think so. I guess what the books that last for me personally, and again, this is kind of different maybe from the sense of like, oh, this is going to be the new Big Sleep or something like that. I kind of do think Tana French is going to be someone who's like, in the future, people will be like, wow, you know, you were alive when those books were coming out, like like that kind of thing, you know, like yeah. I think yeah. I do
you're
think
reading them
like,
every time you with first day you had the copy the day that it came out.
Totally. Yeah. So like, I'm like on the docks waiting to find out what happened to Little Nell. So yeah. So I think that I think she is kind of a writer like that. So for me personally, I think that the books that are going to stay with me are ones where I feel like there's just sort of something to think about here, kind of, I guess.
Right.
But that in that more, that other kind of more abstract sense of like, what's going to be kind of canonical crime fiction. Yeah. I don't know. Good question. What, I'm not sure. Like Ian Rankin right now is really, you know, I think he's pretty good. The Rebus series sells a ton. Lots of people like it. I'm not really sure that in 100 years anyone will read those. So it's such a mug's game. Hard to know what will last.
I guess someone's going to have to do a real study of like, what is there something common? Is there some common ground?
Right.
Like, you know, Hammett and Chandler all the way up through,
right.
You know, say the 1970s, because now we've had what 45 years to look at everything through, say, Ross McDonald. So
I guess
something common though.
Well, maybe in 100 years people won't be reading Hammett. I don't know. I mean,
true.
That's kind of hard for me to imagine right now, right? Because like, you think he's pretty awesome, but I don't know. I don't think it's guaranteed. So
it's true. Not, I guess nothing's guaranteed, right? In the world of the arts, things change. And then maybe,
well, and also, back. And also I think maybe like, you know, maybe people will be like, well, we just don't need a nut to be reading another like white guy. Right? I mean, so, you know, I mean, like, not that I mean, I don't know. I just think that like, people's perspectives are going to change on stuff. And so like, it's impossible for us, I think, to imagine what the future is really going to latch onto.
True. Well, hey, I know you got to teach. So I'm going to let you go. We should do a part 2 sometime or something where we can really get into the difference. What we mean
when that would be great. Crime
fiction. What's the difference between mystery fiction and crime fiction? And is there a difference?
Yes. Yeah. That's a great question. Yeah, I would love to do that. Well, thank you so much for inviting me to do this for all these really intelligent questions. I don't think I was particularly articulate in responding to them, but I sure had fun doing it. So
we got, and worst case, absolute worst case, our listeners have a whole bunch of names to go to the library or the bookstore with. So,
and to me, that's best case. So yes, great.
Right,
do
it. Plan on a part 2, and we'll in the meantime we'll busily be reading. So thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.